and welcome to The Squeal, PIC's Swine Management Podcast, featuring in-depth conversations on topics that matter to you. PIC is the global leader in swine genetics. At PIC, our goal is to make our customers the most successful pig producers by providing them with the best genetics. We know our business success depends on yours. Part 3 of a 3-part conversation on the evolution of genetics and nutrition. Our special guest is Dr. John Patience of Iowa State University. He's joined by Dr. Huisley Orlando, PIC's Global Nutrition Director, and Dr. William Herring, PIC's Director of Global Development. And today, what does the future hold? Fascinating.
John Patience, Professor of Applied Swine Nutrition at Iowa State University.
Huisley Orlando, I'm Global Nutrition Director.
William Herring, responsible for the Global Genetic Improvement Program.
For the next 10 years, next 20 years, what's coming in each of your areas? What gets you up in the morning? What's exciting? William.
So I think in 10 years, I think we'll see, if we look at the distribution of farms out there, customers out there, today, you know, we think of 32, 33 PSY being, you know, a great performing system. I think we're going to see farms that tap on 45. And when you say that, I think the first response is, you know, well, that's kind of nuts. But I would say, look 10 years ago where we were, and I don't think that we're going to do anything but move faster. I think we'll get challenged at times on if that's the right direction, and we'll have to figure out if it is. But, you know, when we have those conversations, you know, my point is that, you know, we're not just competing amongst ourselves. We're competing with other, you know, protein sources in the food industry, and you know, we always have to take that into consideration. Based on what we know today, I believe those are the right directions to keep the pork industry competitive, but we'll have to continually address those.
I want to ask a quick question, William, in that we have been so driven by the parameters that you've described, and then we had kind of a consumer backlash in the last decade or so. And so we always have to take into account those elements, those responses that, well, we want more of this or we want less of that. So how does that shade your...
I think that's a really great question. I think if we, as long as we do the things that John and Huisley have talked about, provide an adequate source of nutrition and in a space to keep pigs happy, I think we're okay. I think if we don't allow those things to keep pace, then that becomes it puts us in the spotlight we don't want to be. And I think those are very fair things to ask of on the genetic side.
Dr. Patience, next decade or two.
Yeah, I see a number of challenges come down. It's a fun question to challenge ourselves with, and in some respects it can be a little bit scary. I think there's some very, very specific things that as nutritionists we're going to have to address. And one of those is what are we going to be feeding to the pig? I think it's fair to say that corn is going to increasingly be used for purposes other than livestock feed. Just as we've seen in the past decade, just a little over a decade, the growth of the ethanol industry and the quantity of corn that's going in that direction, that's probably going to continue, and we will, as nutritionists then, will have to utilize the ingredients that are available to us. Now, I'm not saying that we're not going to be feeding corn in the future. We will still be feeding corn, but in order to be cost competitive, we're going to have to use co-product ingredients, just, for example, as we do with DDGs. But on the topic of DDGs and co-products, there's a product that's changing. And I think it's quite possibly changing more quickly than we think it is, because the ethanol industry is doing a greater job of extracting starch from the corn kernel, and therefore there's less starch residual in the DDGs, so that means more and more energy in DDGs is coming from protein and coming a little bit is from fiber, but it's not easily digested fiber by the pig. If we could come up with ways to improve that digestibility, that'd be great. So number one challenge for us is to be very flexible in our feeding programs and use cost-effective ingredients in order to produce pork that is affordable by the consumer. Then the second, and that really goes back to your comment, Ned, is what are the things that the marketplace are going to expect of us. And if we look back even over just the last 5 years of the changes that have occurred in our industry based on forces from the marketplace, and obviously we're producing a consumer product, so we have to be very cognizant of what that consumer is looking for and the different segments of the consumer marketplace, because I'm a firm believer that some of the demands that are placed on food production are expressed by a portion of the consumers, not by all consumers. So we have to keep that into perspective and into balance. But the move towards reduced use of antibiotics, which the industry is, I think, has moved in a direction very effectively. In fact, the use of antibiotics was going down before the VFDs came into place, and they've dropped substantially since then. And I see more demand in that particular direction. I think the eating quality of our product is also going to be very, very important. And I think pork has made great strides in that respect. I think we can give credit to the geneticists in that respect, as well as to the meat scientists, but we're going to have to pay attention to that. And then finally, the whole area of disease. We need to better understand how to feed pigs that are health challenged, because they are different. Dr. Nick Gabler here at Iowa State recently completed a study that showed that pigs that were infected with the PRRS virus actually had a higher requirement for lysine. I think many people assumed because they were growing more slowly, they had a lower requirement, but their research was pretty clear and showed they have a higher requirement for lysine. But the whole area of health and, you know, global disease transmission patterns, which has everybody's attention right now, I don't see those becoming any less in the future than they are now. So those are three trends that I see that I think are going to be very, very important in the next 10 years.
Questions?
Yeah, same question for both of you, because I don't think we've specifically talked about this, because we focused in on nutrition and genetics. A question for both of you would be that, is it a fair statement that when we look at, let's just in this case say a PIC commercial pig today, or it could be a gilt, doesn't matter, can we make a somewhat broad type of feed budgets work as long as we provide adequate space for the pig, adequate care, just general, the common things that we, if we do those things right, do we have some flex on the nutrition side?
You know, earlier, Weasley, we heard you say you feed them and they grow. Yep. I mean, is that...
Yeah. William, I think that's a really, really good question. And I'm going to be very interested in Susan's answer, but I think you really raised the issue of husbandry. You know, that's an old, old term that we don't use very much anymore. And yet, when I visit farms and see animals that are performing well, you know, good growth rates, good feed conversion, great feed intakes, generally it's good husbandry. And to your point, William, they provided really good facilities, and then they provide really, really good care to their animals. So to some extent, what you say, I would answer that question by yes, that's true. But I also believe going forward, as we look at other aspects of food production, particularly in cropping, they're ahead of us in terms of precision agriculture. And I think precision pork production is already starting in our industry. We see examples of that already. If that's the case, then we are going to be providing those common foundational items for our animals. But from a nutritional point of view, we might be looking at providing feeding programs that are more situation specific. We got a long ways to go in terms of understanding how we're going to do that. But we already see some systems going in that direction. So I think precision ag is going to challenge nutritionists to be more situation specific. But having said that, the items that you just described will always be foundational to success in pork production.
No, I agree. I mean, I think we have flexibility. Yes, the answer is yes. We have some flexibility if we have, a combination with the right environment, or good condition, good management. So, and I also agree with Dr. Patience. We probably just start to get more precise. I mean, look at what we formulated. We formulate on average, but we know that average does not represent the best, our best, but it's not the best. I mean, I see some recent data, I think is going to be presented in the next animal size meeting from one European company, production company, that report different response in amino acid response for different categories of animals based in the same age, but in different weights. I mean, based on the same offspring. My question for those group when I saw this, I mean, this raw data is that they do not present it yet. It's okay. You guys probably have a good data, seeing that the animals in the same age, but different weights respond in different for amino acids. But how can we apply this? It means that probably we need to create this kind of capability to work with the precision nutrition in something like more looking for individual, not on an average of the herd, right?
Your comments, especially about precision agriculture, and I'm a relational thinking kind of a guy, I think of in the old days when we would do soil samples in a field, and we'd take six in the field and mix them up together and send the bag in. Now we do it row by row, foot by foot, as we utilize our yield monitors, etc. So nutritionist, tell me, how is there something that equates to that in your processes? Are we going to be able to do live time monitoring? Or is that one of those 20 years down the road? Maybe so.
Oh, let's just start it. John can also disagree, John. But let's say what happened 10 years ago in terms of sows. We probably have crates, and we feed by hand or some automatic feeders, right? Based in it's individual, but it's hard to control and manage this. Nowadays, we have equipments that calls ESF, electronic soil feeding. So these equipments, I'm not a specialist in this kind of equipment, but if I compare the first model with the current one and the stuff that they are developing today based in learn and in new, let's say, new approach and combination with engineer and animal scientists, that's amazing how they changed the first version with the current version. And I think maybe more a couple years or, I don't know, 10 years or even, I hope that earlier than 10 years, we're going to see in some more precise equipments. I mean, why not we get this kind of equipment and also in growing to finish, I mean, kind of, right? Or, for example, another arena, cameras. We know that a camera, for example, to see its data and softwares, a combination with the two, I mean, device like cameras and softwares to analyze, for example, behavior, measure weight. We have this kind of a equipments available today in some, let's say, some companies today. I mean, not too many customers, but there are some companies invest in this kind of technology. I believe that this kind of precision is going to be able quite soon in the future, and that's certain for us, our life and nutrition much more precise. Because what we do today is based in everything in a trial and on average and everything, but if you know, and I agree with Dr. John, if we know about the feeding take, we can do our job much better than we do today.
Comments, questions, Dr. Patience?
Yeah, the whole area of precision ag, and it usually brought up a number of really good points, but the camera technology, which will identify a pig and will weigh the pig, so we will, in real time, know what the weight of the pigs are in a given pen. And that technology, it's in place right now, but it's not as precise as we need it to be to really get into what we call precision agriculture. The next step, of course, is now that we have that information, what are we going to do with it? How are we going to apply that to improve our productivity, improve our profitability? But there's another way of looking at precision ag, and that is I'm aware of one large system, which is working with a company which has a great deal of experience on big data. In fact, I think there's a number of groups that are doing this, but they're able to capture information right from the very beginning of the pig at the genetic level to the production level, through to the packing plant, through to the consumer, to the grocery store shelf, and capture all of that information and utilize that information to drive improved management. So the precision can be at the level of an individual farm or even an individual pen of pigs or an individual pig, but it can also be improved precision at a system level. And those are the two things that are important in terms of us moving forward in precision ag. I would have one question that I would be interested from both a genetics perspective and a nutritional perspective and a genetic company, and that is, how do you handle the challenge of having such a diversity of circumstances in which you are providing animals? How do you manage the use of your animals in North America versus South America versus Asia versus Europe? Even just temperature and heat stress is going to be very, very different. I'm curious how a company like PIC approaches a challenge like that, and then usually how you handle that from a nutritional point of view.
As you look around the globe with respect to a broad range of environments, you know, how do you deal with that from the standpoint of genetic improvement that really maximizes productivity for each one of those? I think that goes off into a couple of different directions. You know, in the terminal growing pig, we definitely believe, and data says that is a real thing. And to address that, we have, I think we talked about this earlier, we have what we call our GN crossbred program, that basically we have commercial farms established and data that has come in over time from North America, South America, Europe, Russia, as a for example. And in that program, we basically test every GGP terminal sire from our terminal lines to get a meaningful source of data in the growing pig that feeds back to the genetic evaluation and then the genetic improvement of those terminal lines. And so I think as we look across each of the regions where we do see that what we call a genotype by region or environment interaction that exists, and the data substantiates that. On the maternal side, in terms of sow productivity, you know, today we have, it's probably somewhere around 700 active farms that feed into our database every day for purposes of genetic evaluation from customers all over the world and company farms from all over the world. And so we have, you know, I would suggest as broad of a resource in terms of different environments across all the important pig-producing regions in the world. And as we've looked at those data, we don't see quite that environmental sensitivity to how genetics rank. You know, we've looked at it very specifically, and we just don't see that like we did as I referenced some of the terminal traits in the terminal growing pig. So with that said, you know, I guess I would debate that a bit on maternal lines, saying that we don't see that nearly quite as much, or it's not in existence as was suggested. You know, the other thing that I would add to that I think substantiates that, many of our customers are good enough to share their ongoing production data with us, and so that we get visibility to if they're improving or not. And I would say as we look across all the regions, that most of our customers' sow productivity is improving at a similar pace. And so I think that substantiates that, you know, the region-to-region variance with respect to, you know, heat stress, et cetera, probably isn't, you know, quite the factor that one might suspect it is.
Yeah, but a nutrition standpoint, what we are investing in the last couple of years, Dr. John, is trying to increase our range to running trials in different places. of course, most of the camps for North America we're still doing here, but we also are running trials in different places. I mean, I have my team, for example, when I started just one guy. Right now we have a five, and we're still growing this team. I mean, the guy from Philippines showed me that last week some data and from the trial that we run in there, that it's a really interesting data, providing some adaptation in our feed management for sows there. And you know, this kind of situation is going to happen quite soon. I don't think in a big deal they're going to be too much different response, but in terms of some adaptation, we need to thinking about. For example, like, you know, as you guys know, I'm Brazilian. In Brazil, they do not have beers. They do not have a PED. The standard in terms of growth there is too much. It's higher than here. And it does not surprise me that when people report me that they work even above than our requirement, and they see performance, because as you mentioned before, Dr. John, is everything about the intake and health, right? If they do not have our their immunological system activate, they probably will be have a different response. So answer your question about getting a consumer on that, based in nutrition specifically, is getting more local technical service in nutrition specialists there to get the adaptations and invest in research.
Sounds good. Yeah, you have a unique picture of the industry usually.
Joining us on The Squeal today were special guest Dr. John Patience of Iowa State University, with Dr. William Herring, PIC's Director of Global Development, and Dr. Weasley Orlando, PIC's Global Nutrition Director. Let us know if you missed one of the earlier segments. Your management team needs to hear this. You're welcome to share these programs widely in your organization. In fact, we encourage it. For PIC, the international leader of continuous genetic improvement in swine breeding stock and in world-class technical support to the global pork supply chain, I'm Ned Arthur. Thanks for joining us.